Over the next few weeks, the green in our fields will turn to gold and the leaves on the trees will begin to change. This hour, we'll talk about fall color for your yard. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Aaron Style of Ryman Gardens and Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will be here today. We'll talk about some fall color accents for your yard and garden, garden mums, fall blooming perennials, and some other ideas. And of course, Aaron and Richard will answer your questions. Send your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and although it is still technically summer, the football season's getting underway, coffee shops have rolled out their pumpkin flavoring, and that means it's time to start talking about fall. We'll talk about fall blooming perennials, garden mums, and some other ideas for bringing color to your yard or garden. We will be talking with Forester Mark Vitosh in a little while. With us right now, Aaron Style, Manager of Public Programs at Ryman Gardens, and Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. Hello, gentlemen. Hello.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And Richard, before we get to garden mums and fall color, let's talk about the emerald ash borer showing up in Story County.
Right, in Story City. So we knew it was going to happen at some point. Eventually it will spread across the state. At this point, we would probably not suggest doing anything as far as treating this year. You definitely could do that next year, but realize that treatments are effective typically for 1 or 2 years. And so I guess I don't see this as a long-term strategy. I think the best strategy is to maybe treat for a few years, plant some additional trees, and at some point maybe let the ash trees go at some point.
All right. Well, and we can dig into that further a little later in the hour. But let's start talking about some fall color for your yard. Obviously, the leaves have not started changing yet, and we'll talk about that soon as well. But Aaron, I think a lot of us are starting to see those pots of mums at the store and thinking about those kinds of colors. And I think the first thing we should do is talk about chrysanthemums. And there's a difference between the mums that you see at the store and the mums that are actually going to thrive in your garden, right?
Yeah, there is. And many of the mums that you see in the stores are really meant to be treated as annuals. They're there to provide some really great color. They are kind of tolerant of the temperatures that happen in the fall, but to serve as good perennials, most of those plants don't do very well as perennials here in Iowa.
All right. So if you want perennial mums, where do you go?
Well, you start in the spring. most mums, even if you buy a garden, a so-called hardy mum this time of year, there's so little time for that plant to get established before winter comes. And so often it's not very successful to treat it as a perennial. So if you really want perennial mums year after year, your best strategy is actually to find something in the spring, get it planted in the spring, allow that plant to establish itself before winter. Because even the hardiest of mums are still a little touchy here in Iowa. But if you did want to try to hold one over, you could mulch it really heavily, keep the foliage on over the winter. That will help add a little bit of insulation and then hope for the best.
What are some of the other perennials that we might want to think about planting so that we have some nice color in the fall?
In the fall, yeah, besides the leaves, right?
Right.
So there's some fun things. I mean, there's, of course, mum, and that's a real common one, and many of the asters, which are also very ubiquitous this time of year. But things like toad lily, which is a fun shade perennial, has little pink flowers. They often have little spots on them. They almost look like miniature orchids. And they come into full bloom late in the season. So it's a nice little addition to the shade garden because of that. There's some other things like pink turtle head, which is actually a southeastern United States native plant. It likes it a little on the wet side, has pink flowers that are kind of shell-shaped. They look a little bit like the head of a turtle, where that's where the name comes from. Another one I thought would be fun for folks to keep in mind is autumn crocus, which is a bulb. It does get foliage in the spring, And you do plant it in the fall, but that foliage dies back. And then out of nowhere in the middle of fall, you get these what look like overgrown crocus popping up out of the ground, which can be a lot of fun.
Very interesting. Well, it's funny to hear you talk about pink blooms because
I know
that seems like something that we do associate so much with spring.
I know. And actually, all the plants I mentioned were pink. And I think, there's lots of great reds and yellows and oranges, things like sneezeweed and goldenrod and all the coneflowers, some of them will still be blooming this time of year. But some of those other colors are kind of fun.
Right. I mean, it does seem like the predominant color mm-hmm. right now is yellow or gold. And of course, it's gorgeous. And we get more into that as well. And a lot of people like to plant ornamental grasses for that nice gold color in the fall as well.
Absolutely. And a lot of our ornamental grasses will have blooms on them if they don't already in the next couple of weeks, which is also a really nice addition to the garden.
With perennials, in planning for a garden that will be in bloom throughout the season, it seems like fall is kind of an additional challenge because a lot of us do tend to focus on the spring and summer.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the plants that we buy in spring, you know, we buy them because they're blooming in spring, and so they catch our eye. And it's kind of hard to fall in love in the springtime with something that isn't going to be anything real colorful until the fall. So sometimes I think they get forgot that way too.
And with the leaves starting to fall, do we have to worry about making sure that fall blooming flowers don't get covered? I mean, is there a management issue?
Well, most of the plants, all the plants I just mentioned, are perfectly winter hardy here in Iowa. And so you shouldn't run into too many issues with that. And most of these plants, you know, a lot of folks like to do some garden cleanup in the fall. I like to clean up in the fall, too, because I tend to be busier in the spring. But all of these plants would do fine if you just let them do their thing and sit over the winter and do spring cleanup.
What are some of your favorite things that bloom in the fall at Ryman Gardens?
Well, actually, most of the stuff I really enjoy in the fall at the gardens are annuals that we put in all of our containers. So this time of year, the gardens looks great. All the containers are full of plants, and they're just lush and blooming. And then usually in about a week or two, we will start pulling some of that stuff out and replacing it with fall stuff because it's just so big. And so we'll put things like pansies and kales and we even use some perennials as annuals, things like corybelles, which like the cooler temperatures of fall and allow us to extend our season well into close to Thanksgiving and still have color in the containers, which is a lot of fun.
Now, of course, you're growing your own plants, mm-hmm. but it's kind of difficult too if you're thinking about filling a container in the fall. It's not always easy to find stuff at the garden centers.
Yeah, you know, things like mums are very common, but there are, you know, you can find some other things. There are a lot of ornamental kales and those kinds of things available at stores this time of year, and pansies, of course. There are even some really, we have a mix of pansies that will be in the containers at Ryman Gardens this fall that are orange and really dark purple, and it's called the Halloween mix. And they look really nice together, and it's a great compliment for the fall garden.
All right, so they're out there if you're
willing to hunt for them. Yeah.
Richard, last week we talked about seeding your yard, or
right.
maybe it was the week before. I'm losing track of time. But you mentioned anytime through August. How much more of a window do you think we have if we want to plant seeds for our yards?
As far as grass, basically, we'd like to have it done by mid-September. So the best time, basically, is from mid-August to mid-September.
All right. So we still have a couple of more weeks
to
get that job done.
Yes.
Although, if you're going to be watching football, you got to focus.
There's
right?
always Sunday and Monday.
There's football on Sunday and Monday, Richard.
Well, you'll just have to carve out a few hours.
Right, right. You just have to work on your schedule. Well, we would love to hear from you if you have questions for Aaron or Richard. And also, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here in the studio. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Oh, there's his microphone now. Now you can say hello.
Hello.
And you can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also post on our Facebook page. And we'll start with this question from Eric. He says, we had a major infestation of squash beetles, and they killed our squash and zucchini plants quickly. I pulled the plants up and saw a lot of the little critters around and in the soil, so I assume they'll be back again next year. Is
right.
there any way to get to rid the garden of these bugs or ways to control them?
Right. Well, the first thing I would do would be to clean up that debris, get it out of the garden, and destroy it. If you leave that debris there, they're going to hide underneath it, and more of those will survive the winter. So get rid of that debris and destroy it. Next spring, when you plant your squash and the plants begin to grow, check on the underside of the leaves periodically and look for these kind of reddish-brown clusters, which are basically eggs. And when you find those, squash them. Just squash them. If they do hatch, make sure you get the young. And they're kind of whitish in color, and they're typically down toward the base of the plant. But if you can destroy them, if they're not allowed to mature and reproduce, then you can kind of keep it under control. And the insecticides are typically more effective on the young, immature insects. The adults are almost indestructible. And so at that point, when you find them, just use something like 7 or 8 and make sure you destroy that first generation.
All right. Indestructible. You can pick them with your fingers.
Oh,
you can
yes.
overcome them physically.
Yes. Yes.
You just can't spray anything for
right.
them, right?
All right. You can squash them with a brick, but beyond that, there's not much you can do.
All right. And the next question is from Hannah. Are there some prairie grasses that can prevent creek erosion? This is an oak-shaded bluegrass lawn. Heavy rains are eroding the bank and eating away at our lawn. How and when would we plant them if there are such grasses?
Well, the key there would be how much water is running down the actual ditch. Sometimes it's so the force of the water is so great that nothing's going to hold. The nice thing about the native grasses is they do have a deep root system where the roots go down 2 or 3 feet. So if it's not too forceful, that would be an option. I would look at things like switchgrass, which is typically found in moist to wet prairies. I would look at big bluestem, again, typically found in moist to wet prairies, and try some of those. They're native to Iowa. You can buy those at garden centers. There are some companies that specialize in native plants, too.
All right. And when should she think about planting?
Well, it kind of depends upon how you do it. If you buy plants, you can basically do it almost any time during the growing season. And that would be easier to establish if you're using plants. As far as seeds, there are a number of companies that sell some of these seed mixes, either basically spring or basically late summer.
All right. So right now, if you're planting seeds, right now, if you're planting plants.
The only thing about that would be if it's near a creek, you might have a lot of erosion, so it might actually be better for plants.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron, Aaron Style, Manager of Public Programs at Ryman Gardens, and DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. You can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me I have Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh, and Aaron Style, Manager of Public Programs at Ryman Gardens. And you are welcome to join our conversation as well with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before the break, we were answering Hannah's question about planting prairie grasses to prevent creek erosion. And Mark, I know you had something you wanted to add.
Yeah,
to
I was
that.
Over here waving.
Right.
And the music
and
came
just
on.
Just ignored you.
That's all right. I was going to suggest to Hannah, depending on where she lives, that she contact her local Soil and Water Conservation District or local NRCS office, Natural Resource Conservation Service, and maybe see if there's anyone available to look at the creek itself and really look at the situation. to see if that's something that would even work. In some of these communities and stuff, there are now urban specialists that can help even if she's in an urban area, especially if she's in a rural area. They may be able to look at the situation and give her some suggestions.
And the way we're managing creeks now is pretty different from the way we've managed them in the past.
Correct. The other thing we have to remember, though, in the last couple of years, we've had so many serious heavy water events in some of these areas. Some of these creeks and in our waterways and stuff have not been able to handle 5 inches in 3 hours or 8 inches over a 24-hour period. So there's a lot of things going on. But yeah, well, things have changed. Sometimes we can use riparian buffer strips, native grasses, those different things. But sometimes there may be something about the creek itself that may make it difficult to do things. So it might be helpful to get some assistance.
All right. Let's get to the phones. And first, we've got Gerald in Waterloo. Hi, Gerald.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
I've got a 2-acre farm pond. And in about in the middle, I've got an island. It's all about 30 feet across. It's, when we made it, it's all clay with probably about 6-8 inches of black dirt on top for grass and bricked around. And I want to put a tree on it, and I just wonder what would be a good tree that will handle that heavy clay, and if it's too late to plant this year, if I can keep it watered.
My vote would be a weeping willow.
My vote, too.
Yeah. It's unanimous. So can he still plant this year if he can find one?
I would push for the spring, Gerald.
Okay.
I'm just a spring guy. I like things in the spring. I think it gives them a better chance. I mean, you could plant in the fall if you could get a potted tree. I would look for a potted weeping willow. Or if you wanted to start from scratch next spring, if you knew someone that had a local weeping willow, you could take your own cuttings and try to start those if you wanted to do it in the spring. But I prefer spring over fall. I just think you get a better start and stuff. But if you can get a potted tree now and get it in the next month, yeah, you could still do it now.
All right, Gerald, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Tony in Des Moines. Hi, Tony.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, I'd like some general advice on landscaping and planting under a Norway maple. It's a fairly good-sized tree. I know I've got to think about those surface roots. Mm-hmm. I'd like to do some flagstones or pavers, shrubs, perennials. I just need some general advice on how you go about that with a tree that size.
Yeah, the maples have a very extensive root system, very shallow. So the environment is very challenging for other plants.
Okay.
I might try things like, for example, some of the hostas.
Okay.
Some of the really vigorous varieties like Royal Standard, Hosta lentifolia, maybe some of the ground covers like possibly Creeping Lily Turf.
Okay.
Barren Wort would be nice too. That likes dry shade.
Barren Wort.
Yep. And the Wild Ginger would like that kind of situation
okay.
too.
Do you dare do any kind of pavers or flagstones anywhere under that tree, or are you going to cause some damage to those surface roots?
This is where I'm going to jump in. I would suggest mulch instead of any kind of pavers or any kind of site disturbance, because you've got roots under there too. And if you do any kind of major fill or compaction over those, you could cause long-term damage to that tree. And a lot of times they don't show damage right away. It may take 3 to 5 years for that tree to respond.
Okay.
The other thing is one of the reasons why those roots may be shallow, it's not just the maples. They seem to get the hard rap, but maybe sometimes in those situations, if the soils are fairly shallow, those roots really grow where the environment is good. So sometimes when we have shallow roots, it's just an environment that maybe that soil, there's a hard clay pan or something a few inches down, and so they're adapting to that. But as you know, they're going to keep growing and keep getting bigger. But a light layer of mulch probably is the best versus any kind of soil or any other kind of fill.
All right. Tony, thank you so much for your call, and good luck with that. Steve is on the line next in Garber. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have several patches in my lawn that have subsoil on top instead of topsoil, and I've had trouble establishing lawn on those. 2 years ago, I planted a mixture of Dutch white clover and grass, and the clover overtook the grass, so I have almost pure patches of Dutch white clover there now, which I would like to get rid of. I don't need to get rid of all of the clover, but I want to have it predominantly grass. I'm worried about the seed bank of Dutch clover seed that was probably established there over the last couple of years. So I have two basic questions. Do I need to worry about that seed bank? And if it is going to be a problem, how do I deal with it? The only way I could think of dealing with it is to wait until next spring, plant some annual ryegrass. Then when the Dutch clover came on, I would hit it with one of these weed and feed lawn products and keep doing that until I was satisfied the Dutch clover was under control, and then till it up again and plant perennial grasses. Is that a reasonable solution, or do I not have a problem at all?
Well, one possible solution would be to go out there right now and destroy everything, and one possibility is Roundup. Then once everything is destroyed, then I would maybe remove a few inches of what's there currently and find either compost or some good, well-drained, fertile soil, bring that in, work that into the existing soil, and then reseed. You will have definitely a seed bank as far as Dutch white clover, and so I would expect to see it next year, and if it does appear, then I would take care of it next fall. So, but I think you do need to somehow improve the growing conditions, the soil conditions, and so I would be inclined to remove some of that existing soil, get rid of it, discard it, and then bring in either compost or some well-drained soil.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Steve, thanks a lot for your call. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a question from Doug in North Liberty. I have a katsura tree, I don't know if I said that right, with a 7-inch trunk in an area I'm planning to put a cobblestone patio in. This tree has a lot of roots at the ground level. Will I be endangering the tree if I cut some of the surface roots when I put in the patio? So returning to the subject we were just on. But Mark
is going to say yes.
And I would say yes.
You know, katsura is a smaller tree, almost like a redbud. They don't get very large. But any root system that's damaged, anytime you get over 10 to 20% of the root system impacted, that is going to have an impact on that tree.
All right.
That's a tough situation, but anytime you do any kind of disturbance like that, there could be some long-term damage.
Well, and let's look at it from the other side, too. Wouldn't you also risk having your patio disrupted as well by the roots growing and moving in the soil?
That's a good question. Yeah, there's going to be changes at that point, too. But yeah, it probably won't be even over time. Again, they're not a huge tree, so they probably won't have huge, huge root systems. But yeah, they could cause long-term disturbance that way too.
All right. And here's a question from Dan and Gilbert. How do I know when to harvest my pears?
Well, basically, there's a slight color change. Typically, they're kind of a medium to dark green. And when they're mature, they turn kind of a light green. So there is that slight color change that if you're paying attention, you should notice. And the other thing is those little white spots, the lenticels on the fruit, they typically turn brown. Now, when they're ready to pick, they're still hard as a rock. And they'll ripen inside typically in maybe a week or 10 days. But they're going to be still hard. So you have to look for that color change.
All right. So don't wait until they're soft.
Right. If you wait till they ripen on the tree, they're basically not edible. They're just very bad tasting.
Okay. Good to know. Next up, Jeff is on the line in Ames. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
What's your question?
I'm trying to revitalize my lawn, and right now I've got a lot of creeping Charlie. And what I would like to do is do an herbicide to kill the creeping Charlie, but I would also like to reseed this year. Is that possible, or do I need to wait until spring to reseed if I do an herbicide this fall?
I don't think you can do both. The reason being that as far as the ground ivy or creeping Charlie, it typically takes two applications about a month apart. And so I don't think you can do both. I guess my suggestion would be to try to take care of the creeping Charlie this fall. And I would put on a broadleaf herbicide sometime around late September, early October, and come back and do it again in a month. And make sure the product that you use contains either 2,4-D or triclopyr. And that's T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R. Those are fairly common ingredients, and they do a fairly good job. Now, if you apply those materials, you won't really notice anything by November, but by spring, hopefully it's going to be gone. And then if it's gone next year, then try to reseed late next summer.
All right. Excellent.
All right, Jeff, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Paul in Davenport. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning.
What's your question?
We have a large magnolia shrub that it's about 4 years old, and it's pretty much covered in those scales. And then in the summertime, it gets pretty heavily loaded with wasps and other bees, which is a concern because we have young children. I was just curious what we could possibly do to help out that magnolia.
Well, that is magnolia scale. And that is one of the largest scale insects that we see in Iowa. They're very difficult to control. One strategy might be to, if it's restricted to maybe one or two branches and they're not main branches, one strategy might be to simply prune off those branches and get rid of them. You can use insecticides, but it has to be at a specific time, and I can't recall exactly when that is.
I'm trying to think too, Richard. It's when something flowers, but I can't remember what. When something else flowers is the phenology that you connect it to, but I can't remember in the spring what that is. And I think if he Googles magnolia scale and then puts ISU, you guys should have one
right.
of your notes that he could
right.
pick up that has that kind of schedule on it.
But it's difficult to control, and you have to be very specific as far as when you apply that insecticide, because you typically can't destroy them. You have to destroy the crawler stage of the insect.
All right, Paul, thanks a lot for your call, and good luck with that. Frank is on the line next in Cedar Falls. Hi, Frank. Frank, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, what's your question?
I've got an evergreen in my back, and I've noticed that the very top tip is turning brown. What's going on there?
Well, Frank, it could be a lot of things. It's going to depend on the species. What I would suggest is you try to take some pictures or some samples, at least of the tree itself, and take those into your county extension office. I mean, if it's a pine tree, there's actually on some of the different pines, we had some tip blight this summer. Also, with the dry conditions we've had lately, you could have some drying of the tips that way. It depends if it's a pine or spruce or an arborvitae. I mean, there's a lot of different possibilities out there depending on species. So, again, what I would suggest is you've got a county extension office in Blackhawk County. I would take some samples and try to get some pictures of kind of what's going. If you can reach any of those tips and take a sample or two and take that in too, they can help you at least maybe start the process of diagnosis.
Okay. Frank, thanks a lot for your call. And let's go next to Angela in Waterloo. Hi, Angela.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I've been fighting a battle with hollyhock rust for several years, and I'm not winning. And I've done some research, and I've tried several tactics. I've made sure to clear out all of the dead foliage in the fall. I've tried plucking off the leaves as the rust shows up, and it just continues to completely decimate this patch of hollyhocks that I have. They're beautiful, and I'd like to keep them. What else can I try to get rid of this stuff?
Well, you know, timing for a lot of fungicides is essential. And knowing that you have this issue every year means that you may be of some benefit to kind of start treatment before you actually start to see a lot of stuff. You know you're going to have it. So you might as well start treatment kind of more preemptively. I would challenge you, though, to really consider how important is this battle. Hollyhocks are nice plants, but unless they have some kind of sentimental value, they're probably not worth the effort putting into it. And I might consider something else in that spot. And many people don't like to hear that, but
that's why I've been fighting the battle so passionately, because we bought this house from an old couple that had lived here all their lives, and they planted these beautiful flowers, and I like to keep the flowers with the house. Kind of, it's like ties us to that couple that lived here all their lives.
Sure.
But I'm kind of deciding that it's not worth all this work.
It is.
Wanted to see if there's any other idea.
Right. What if Angela moved away from hollyhocks for a couple of years? Could she plant them again there, or would the problem come back immediately?
It would come back
fairly
quickly. So I consider those plants something to be observed from the distance, because because they're pretty when they're in bloom. But if you look at the plants close up, the foliage, you typically have insect damage, you have the rust. But if you look at them from a distance, they look nice. They're kind of a classic old-fashioned plant. But they're, when you look at them close up, they're not typically very pretty.
You can make little dolls out of the blooms. Have you ever done that?
These things aren't even pretty from a distance.
Okay.
They're
that bad.
The foliage off of them. It's that bad. And
okay.
I have fought so hard. So is there like a different, is there a specific variety of hollyhocks that maybe have been bred to avoid this a little bit more?
Not really. No, unfortunately not. So I think it's basically cleaning up the debris, maybe spacing the plants a little bit in the spring, removing some, and maybe using fungicides.
All right. Good luck, Angela. Your heart's in the right place. You tried. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back to answer more questions. I'm here with horticulturist Richard Duran and Aaron Stile and DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh, Aaron Stile, Manager of Public Programs at Ryman Gardens, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. And you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to slip in an email question here. This is from Marianne in Polk City. My privet hedge has gotten too big and needs to be cut back by about half. When should I do this and how?
Well, I would do that as far as pruning it in late winter, typically March, early April, before it leaves out. I would be inclined to either prune it back to near ground level within a few inches of the ground, or do some selective pruning rather than giving it a haircut, let's say 3 feet off the ground.
All right. And did we say when?
Basically late winter.
Okay. And this is from Brenda in Huxley. She's wondering when she should start pruning her tomato blossoms back, because it's unlikely that they would produce before frost.
Well, if you have a standard tomato variety like a Big Boy or Celebrity, it takes about 45 to 50 days for them to develop into a ripe fruit after blooming. So at this point, they're probably not going to mature if they form at this time of year.
All right. Next up, we've got Ralph on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Ralph.
Hi there. Got a Green Gates plum tree. Got a good crop on it. One of the minor limbs is the leaves that fell off. Is that possibly fire blight? And before I get any farther, I'll go on a little farther. I noticed there's a heck of a good crop of walnuts and quite a mast of bur oak acorns. Is the state interested in any of that kind of stuff for starting new seedlings next year?
All right, well, let's talk plums first.
Okay, plums.
And then I'll jump in.
Okay. It's not fire blight. Fire blight occurs on apple and crab apple. But if I think that branch has died, I would prune it out immediately.
The other thing I would look for, too, there's a bunch of insects, one called shot hole borer and some others that come in on stressed branches. And a lot of times you look on the branches, you'll see these BB-sized holes. That tells you that branch has already died, but you'll see that they're there, so you can remove that. If you see any type of exit holes, that would be something I'd look for on that branch, too.
All right.
As far as the nuts?
Right, nuts.
Okay, the nuts. The state nursery in Ames and some of our state forests, we often buy certain seeds. What I would suggest, you just go to iowadnr.gov and you get our number for our state nursery and call over there and see if we're purchasing. It depends. They usually this time of year send out a notice to us, and that'll probably be coming in the next couple of weeks. I don't know if we're buying yet. Some of the stuff we do is already on contract, but in some of our in some years, depending on our needs, we will buy. So I would call our state nursery in Ames and see what our schedule is for buying this year. And I would agree with you. I've actually seen quite a few bur oaks in different places over here in eastern Iowa. Not as much white oaks, but quite a few walnuts and quite a few shagbark hickories too. But I would give them a call, and they can let you know if we're buying or not this year.
All right, and the squirrels are celebrating, right?
Yes.
Sharon's on the line next in Mason City. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I appreciate you having me on. I try and listen to your show as much as I can.
I have
a question about gypsum. We're recently moved in a place, put grass down. There's a thin layer of topsoil and then quite a bit of clay underneath. And I have been told that if you put gypsum down in the fall and again in the spring, that that starts breaking up the clay. And I've read different theories on this, you know, some saying no. And so I just thought I'd talk to the experts.
Okay. And I would say no also.
Anything I can do?
Well, the best way that you can deal with that, if you have existing turf, is to core aerate both in the spring and late summer, early fall. September is a great time to do it, where you get a core aerator or have it done by someone, and you want to pull out plugs of soil.
How big?
As deep as you can, hopefully 3 inches in length. And if you do it yourself, if you rent a core aerator, run over the yard 3 to 4 times. Make many, many holes in the ground. And after that, you can fertilize. That would be great. You can drag it with a piece of fencing or drag mat to break up the soil cores. And you could also do it in the spring. But that's the best way to improve the environment for the turf grass.
What type of fertilizer?
Just a typical lawn fertilizer would be fine.
Okay. But gypsum, forget it, huh?
Forget it. Yep.
All right.
Sorry.
Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got Joyce in Iowa City. Hi, Joyce.
Hi. Well, what I am wondering is I have a couple bushes of the hydrangeas that are got only 2 blooms on them. What can I do for them? And then what can I also do for blue flowers?
Okay, so do you remember what type of hydrangea they were or what the tag may have said?
I'm not sure of the one that is up, you know, that is not blooming. The other ones that are blooming are those, are they called summer?
Oh, endless summer.
Endless summer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so for the ones that are not blooming, I wonder if they are not the type. We lost a lot of hydrangeas died to the ground this year, and some species of hydrangeas bloom on current growth and some bloom on last year's growth. Okay. I suspect that the ones that are not blooming this year died to the ground in our harsh winter and are the type that bloom on previous year's growth. So if you don't see any flowers next year, that's a cause for, as long as we don't have a winter like we did last winter, that's a cause for some concern. Now, the endless summer is the one you can turn the flowers on that blue. It's a challenge in Iowa. Our soils tend to be pretty basic or neutral at best.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, though, you can, there are some products you can buy that fertilize that help kind of acidify the soil a little bit, because the blue will come if the soil pH is a little lower than our typical pH. So, the one I'm thinking of right off the top of my head is Miracid, but they sell them often for people like you who want to do this. It is a continuous chore. It's not something that will last very long. It will be something you'll have to do continuously to get the blue. Otherwise, they will turn pink and you can enjoy the pink.
Yeah, I do. So when you say it's endless, how once a month that you put that on, or?
You can apply it. I would apply it probably every other time that I have to apply water at about, half strength. Or you could apply it once in the spring. Maybe again in early summer. I wouldn't apply it later in the season, though.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank
you. All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Joyce. And let's slip in another email question here. And this one actually relates to a question we had earlier about all those nuts. Somebody wants to establish a grove or has an established grove and wants to let the squirrels help plant. What can he do to encourage seedlings? This is a question we
actually,
never get.
Nothing.
Right. Well, actually, what some people have done is they will collect. I mean, obviously, let the squirrels do their thing. That'll help. Some people, though, if they want them in certain areas, have actually taken strawberry boxes. And you put kind of a layer in there and put those in strategic locations where you want them to find them. And they'll come to those, and sometimes they'll bury. It's hard to track those nuts
right.
with something, but some people have said that they've seen some differences. But that may be one way to at least concentrate them in areas where maybe the squirrels are so they can find them.
All right, how about clearing debris? Is there any kind of a
– No. They'll if they're there, they'll find them.
All right.
You know, so – squirrels are good at doing that, and but maybe concentrating them. And the one thing you don't want to do is make big piles, especially like walnuts and stuff, because they'll overheat, and that could actually hurt the viability.
Okay.
So you wouldn't want to put them in large piles, but maybe
and
just
not
small.
Not in the sun.
And not in the sun, right.
Okay. All right.
The other thing he could do, though, is just start picking them himself. And if he has areas that he wants, taking seed now as it falls in the fall – and putting it in no more than twice the diameter of the seed, just making a little hole and sticking it in as he walks and stuff is an excellent way to do it. Yes, yes.
All right. Amy is on the line next in Indianola. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is about lavender. I'm out in the country on an acreage, and I've had maybe 2 to 3 dozen lavender on my place, and it thrived for 10 years with no attention whatsoever. They almost all died last year. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming it was the weather, the winter. But my problem is I went to start planting back different areas. I got about a dozen lavender from 2 different nurseries, planted them all, and almost all of them died. There's maybe 3 that are thriving.
Well, lavender is kind of finicky in Iowa. And the last winter was very, very hard on many plants. I guess the key would be to make sure you plant in a well-drained soil. They do require a well-drained soil. And as far as cultivars, there are a number of cultivars. I guess I would try Munstead, which is a fairly common one. And I would plant in the spring so they have the entire growing season to get established. Make sure it's a well-drained soil. If we have a dry late summer and fall, make sure they're well-watered in the fall. And maybe give them a little bit of protection maybe in the fall, maybe a little bit of straw that first winter.
Okay.
All right. Amy, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Kay in Algona. Hello, Kay.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is about lilacs. 7 years ago, we planted a row of lilacs in front of a Quonset building pretty much to cover up that building because we didn't like the way it looked. And this year, we had a wet year. We have put an addition on to the south side of this Quonset building, and it diverted some of that water, and we had a lot of water in the yard close to the south end of the hedge. And after they bloomed, the south end started dying. They just died, like, really fast. All the leaves turned brown, and the next one next to it is starting to die, too. We don't know if it's from the water or what is causing them to die.
Well, it could be a water issue. Maybe it's too wet, and they're developing some type of root rot. That's a possibility. They would prefer a well-drained soil. That's their preference. So if it's been extremely wet, I could see where that might be an issue.
And you might want to try to probe in that area. I mean, if it's really mucky in that area, I mean, that's going to tell you that it's not drying out, and that could be part of the issue. Or the ones that are dying when you pull them out, or if you take them out or take some root samples, that those roots will often be kind of mushy and stuff if root rot's a problem. But that I agree with Richard, that's a definite possibility. But I would kind of check that soil in that area to really see if that's the difference.
All right. Kay, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Tyler in Rockwell. Hi, Tyler.
Hey, how are we doing today?
Good. What's your question?
I've got a some kind of an evergreen tree in a grove, and it's got like a white pus coming out of like a bunch of blisters. Kind of wondering, obviously it's probably not a good sign on a tree, but if it will spread to the other ones.
Is it white and kind of yellow? Is it near the branch connections, or is it just on the stem itself?
It's on the actual stem itself.
Okay. I mean, it could be a fir, could be a spruce, or it could even be a white pine. Again, I would try to take a picture try to get example of that or the picture itself and identify the tree and get that to your county extension office. There's a number of possibilities. One thing, Tyler, it could just be a wound too. Evergreens will actually have sap that will release or pitch if they're wounded at all or anything like that. So even if it's just a wound in the trunk. The thing I was thinking about too, there's an insect, especially on pines, called Zimmerman pine moth. That material will come out and then it'll turn kind of an off color too, and that's actually caused by a borer that's inside the tree. So I would try to get the tree identified and then maybe take a picture or two and work with your county extension office to see if they can identify what's going on. But it could just be a wound too.
Okay. I mean, there's like it's all over the base. I mean,
sounds a little more serious than just a wound. So like I say, I would get the especially, I mean, Zimmerman pine moth, like I said, it usually concentrates along where the branches are connected and not just on the stem. But there are also some canker diseases, especially on spruce and others, and the pitch is a response to those problems. So that's where I think the species identification will help and maybe give them a chance to kind of hone in what's going on.
All right, Tyler, thanks for your call. This is an email question from Brent. Is it too late to transplant rhubarb this season to a more desirable location?
No, I'd try it in probably mid-September.
All right. Barb asks, when is a good time to move daylilies and other perennials, and do I cut them back or let them die?
With daylilies, you can do that basically now, no problem, or early next spring. That's not true for all perennials, but daylilies are very adaptable. They're very tough. So you could do it now, and what I'd probably do is if you dig those up and divide those, I'd probably cut the foliage back when you replant them, maybe leave 6 to 8 inches of foliage.
All right. This is from Sandy. I planted a Kentucky coffee tree about 2 weeks ago. It's about 2 inches in diameter, large root ball. The leaves on a couple of branches have turned a yellowish color. Is this due to the shock of transplanting or some other issue? I watered it well daily until we started getting regular rain in the past few days. Should I continue to water daily?
I would probe the ball and see if it's moist because it was dry up to that point. And usually early watering, we try to water it every couple of days, probably not every day. Mm-hmm. So I would check that ball to see. It's a little early for them to be changing fall color, so there could be some stress to the transplant shock. But really try to probe that ball or where the pot was and see how moist that ball is. And
if
it's dry, try to give it some more water. The other thing she has to realize, though, is maybe probe below to make sure if it's a clay or tighter soil that she doesn't have water coming up from below and it's just sitting in water.
Okay. And this is from Mary. She has a friend who teaches kindergarten. She says she knows an apple tree won't grow true from seeds, but her class planted seeds from an apple as an experiment. They sprouted. They're about 6 inches tall. They're in pots. What should she do to keep them alive over the winter? And can they be planted outside? Do they have to stay in the pots?
Well, I think a couple options. One is if they have a unheated garage, they could probably put those in there around maybe mid to late November. That would be one option. The other option would be to dig a hole and set the pots in the ground outdoors and then put soil back around the pots and then put chicken wire fencing around them so the rabbits don't get them.
Very, very important, especially when kindergartners' hopes are at stake, right?
Yes.
All right, Richard Duran, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran. Aaron Stile, thank you.
Yeah, it was great talking with you.
Aaron Stiles, Manager of Public Programs at Ryman Gardens, and Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
And I know you'll come back and talk about fall color in a few weeks.
Can't wait.
We start seeing it. Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester, will be back with Horticulture Day next Friday. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe.